Catherine Hayhoe never meant to become a climate scientist. In fact, in college, she started out studying astrophysics. But she needed one more class to finish her degree, and she found a new one over in the geography department on climate science.
Growing up in Canada, you know, I kind of had the perspective that the grass is green, the sky is blue, and climate is changing due to human activities. But I'd always mentally lumped climate change together with other environmental issues.
Right.
Issues that environmentalists care about and that the rest of us think that we probably should fix one day, but not really something that I was primarily concerned about.
But she says taking that class completely changed her perspective. It showed her that climate change isn't just an environmental issue. It's an everything issue.
It's a people issue. It's an economic issue, a health issue, an issue of national security, natural resources. And most importantly for me, it's a humanitarian issue because it exacerbates poverty and lack of access to clean water and refugee crises and diseases that nobody should be dying from in this day and age.
Since, Hayhoe has dedicated her life to the cause. She's now the director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University, and she was just named a UN Champion of the Earth, the United Nations' highest environmental honor. She's also an evangelical Christian who wrote a book with her husband, who's also a pastor, called Climate for Change, Global Warming Facts for Faith-Based Decisions. She was in Phoenix for the Geological Society of America's annual meeting last week, and I sat down with her to talk more about her work and why she calls climate change a threat multiplier.
And that term comes from the military. They are the ones who coined the term threat multiplier. But I think it's the perfect description of a changing climate because it takes all of the issues we're already struggling with today. So poverty and injustice and jobs and economics and immigration and global leadership. It takes all the issues we're concerned about and it exacerbates them or amplifies them or makes them more challenging to deal with. And that's why we care.
How has your religious background sort of intersected with your work in climate change? You and your husband, who is a pastor, authored a book about this, right?
Mm-hmm. We did. Well, so I'm a Christian and I also grew up as a missionary kid in South America. My parents were missionaries and educators down there for a while.
Wow.
And that was a big part of helping me understand how people are so vulnerable to naturally occurring climate and weather risks, whether it's floods and landslides, droughts and heat waves or more. But also then connecting the dots when I took this class on how climate change is exacerbating these issues. I truly believe that we are told to love others, to care for others, to take responsibility over every living thing on this planet, as it says in Genesis 1. And so as a Christian, that was a big part of what caused me to change what I do, to spend my time working on climate change because it affects every living thing on this planet, including us.
So what's your message, especially to evangelicals, to other Christians about climate change, especially when they're, you know, the politics can get in the middle and you might not have everybody agreeing with you on that?
Mm-hmm. Today in the United States, the number one predictor of whether we agree that climate is changing, humans are responsible, the impacts are serious, and we need to act, is not how much we know about the science. It is not how smart we are. It is simply where we fall on the political spectrum.
Right.
That is it. And increasingly in the U.S., conservative Christianity, both Protestant and Catholic, has become associated with the right-hand side of the political spectrum, primarily due to issues related to abortion and other things like that. And so now, unfortunately for many of us, our statement of faith is written first by our political party and only second by the Bible. And so what I do when I talk to people is I see it sort of like in the book of James in the Bible, it talks about how you're like somebody who looked in the mirror and then went away and forgot who you are. And so to us as Christians, when we say, oh, climate isn't changing, or if it is changing, it doesn't matter because it's all good. No, it's not good. It is disproportionately affecting the poorest and most vulnerable people, the very people who we as Christians are told to care for. And what I see myself doing is holding up a mirror and reminding us of who we really are. Caring about a changing climate is not inconsistent with who we are as Christians. It is actually not only entirely consistent with it, but if we truly take what the Bible says seriously, we would be out at the front of the line demanding action.
Is it frustrating to you that those conservative Christians that you mentioned there are not the ones on the front lines of this? Like, how do you break that line down? How do you talk to those audiences and convince them that this is not about politics?
Well, the interesting thing is there are a lot of us who are on the front lines. So there's an organization called Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. The young is because when you turn 30, they kick you out of the group. And they have 20,000 members across the U.S. working in colleges and universities, petitioning for clean energy standards in states, marching in the climate strike, directly connecting their Christian values from taking the Bible seriously to why we care about a changing climate. I serve as science advisor for the Evangelical Environmental Network, the National Association of Evangelicals, which represents evangelicals in the U.S. They wrote a report 5 years before the Pope did, connecting climate impacts to poverty and how caring about the poor means caring about climate. And of course, the Pope wrote his encyclical, which really connected the dots between Christian values, what we truly believe the Bible says, and why climate change matters to us, and the World Evangelical Alliance, which represents over 600 million evangelicals around the world. They care so much about this issue that the Secretary General of the WEA was an official delegate for his country, the Philippines, to the Paris Climate Conference.
So where's the disconnect?
The disconnect is in our politics in the United States. Our politics has gotten to the point where many of us practice what sociologists call moral therapeutic deism. And that's a long word. Sociologists like long phrases. What that means is we're sort of using God as like the vague idea of a God as something therapeutic to give us a sense of morality. But we're not actually reading the Bible. 50% of people who identify as evangelical who voted for Trump don't go to church. So increasingly, a lot of us who call ourselves Christians here in the United States particularly, but it is certainly spreading to other countries as well, our statement of faith is written first by our political ideology, only a distant second by the Bible, and if the two come into conflict, we will go with our political ideology over what the Bible says. And my question is, can we call ourselves Christians if that's what we do?
So then I want to transition and talk about where we stand now with climate change in general. We're starting to see, I think, more awareness of this. You saw the youth climate strikes just last week all over the world. Do you feel like we're at a tipping point?
Well, I know that it's shifting because I follow the polling data. And this past January, we saw the biggest jump in Americans' levels of concern over the impacts of a changing climate that they've seen in well over a decade of polling. Oh. The number one reason for that jump, I think, is the fact that the chickens are coming home to roost. I mean, 10 years ago, to see the evidence of a changing climate with your own eyes, you pretty much had to go up to the Arctic, where you could see thawing permafrost, eroding coastlines, retreating sea ice, and melting glaciers. But now, today, right here in Phoenix, we can see the changes with our own eyes. Phoenix is the second fastest warming city in the entire United States. In Phoenix, we have extreme heat already, but a changing climate is exacerbating that, leading to really serious concerns over health and air quality in Phoenix.
So as you look at that problem and from that perspective locally here in Phoenix, what do you think needs to happen? I mean, this is obviously like a multitude of things, but what's first on your agenda?
Well, when we look to the future, we have three choices. We can reduce the carbon emissions that are contributing to this problem. We can build resilience and prepare for the impacts that we can't avoid, or we can suffer. And the choice is not which of these, the choice is how much. Because the faster we cut our carbon emissions, the less impacts there will be and the less suffering will result. So really the answer is we have to do it all. And the good news is we are. So here in Phoenix, for example, the SRP is preparing to provide power and water in a changing climate. They are taking into account the future changes in their plants. But at the same time, we have to wean ourselves off the fossil fuels that are driving this problem. And so changing renewable energy standards across the state, encouraging adoption of solar energy, which Arizona is one of the places in the country where new solar energy is currently cheaper than any other type of energy. And really reducing our contribution to the problem and also preparing for the impacts that some amount of impacts are inevitable. So the impacts we can't avoid is key. Because if we don't do those two things as much as we can, the third choice is suffering. And that's what we all want to avoid.
Yeah. All right. That's Catherine Hayhoe. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Catherine Hayhoe is the director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University and a newly named UN Champion of the Earth.